Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. June Examination Session 2014. English as a Second Language. Extended Tier. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the test. Teacher, please give out the question papers, and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the test. Look at questions 1 to 6. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. You will hear each item twice. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answers should be as brief as possible. You will hear each item twice. Question 1. What is the new reading book going to be all about?
Now, everyone, we are going to study a new book for the end-of-term examination.
Is it going to be another 19th century novel?
No, we're going to study a more modern book. The famous author Suzette Wilson wrote it in 1975, which I know might seem a long time ago to you, but its main theme, being part of a large family, is really interesting for us all, even in 2014. It's funny, and I think you're all going to enjoy it. Now, everyone, we are going to study a new book for the end-of-term examination.
Is it going to be another 19th century novel?
No, we're going to study a more modern book. The famous author Suzette Wilson wrote it in 1975, which I know might seem a long time ago to you, but its main theme, being part of a large family, is really interesting for us all, even in 2014. It's funny, and I think you're all going to enjoy it.
Question 2. Which two pieces of information does Marcus need so that he can change the customer's order?
Online help desk here. Marcus speaking. How can I help?
Hello. I'm trying to order a sweatshirt from your website, and I've made a mistake. I want a medium-sized sweatshirt in blue, but I clicked on large and red by mistake. What should I do?
Give me your name and I'll take a look. I also need the order number. You can see it at the top left-hand corner of your screen. Then I'll be able to correct it for you.
Oh, that's a relief. Thank you.
Online help desk here. Marcus speaking. How can I help?
Hello. I'm trying to order a sweatshirt from your website, and I've made a mistake. I want a medium-sized sweatshirt in blue, but I clicked on large and red by mistake. What should I do?
Give me your name and I'll take a look. I also need the order number. You can see it at the top left-hand corner of your screen. Then I'll be able to correct it for you.
Oh, that's a relief. Thank you.
Question 3. What kind of shoes is the girl wearing? And what is wrong with them?
Oh, my goodness. I've just made it. For once, the train was on time.
You did have to run pretty fast. I saw you from way back there, and I was worried I'd have to go into town on my own.
Everything went wrong. I couldn't find my coat or my mobile phone. And then one of the heels of my black shoes broke off. That's why I'm wearing my sports shoes. I didn't want to because they're really dirty. I didn't have time to clean the mud off after my last run.
Well, at least you were able to run fast.
That's true. Oh, my goodness. I've just made it. For once, the train was on time.
You did have to run pretty fast. I saw you from way back there, and I was worried I'd have to go into town on my own.
Everything went wrong. I couldn't find my coat or my mobile phone. And then one of the heels of my black shoes broke off. That's why I'm wearing my sports shoes. I didn't want to because they're really dirty. I didn't have time to clean the mud off after my last run.
Well, at least you were able to run fast.
That's true.
Question 4. Where exactly is the bus stop that the man needs? Give 2 details.
Does this bus go to the shopping mall in the town centre?
Sorry, no. This one goes to the station. You need the number 7 bus that goes to the marketplace. Go across the street to the bus stop outside the bank and get the one going the other way.
Thank you. Does this bus go to the shopping mall in the town centre?
Sorry, no. This one goes to the station. You need the number 7 bus that goes to the marketplace. Go across the street to the bus stop outside the bank and get the one going the other way.
Thank you.
Question 5. Which item does Manu have to carry to the car first?
Manu, help me load up the car, please. I've got the camping stuff together here in the hallway, but I need someone strong to carry it to the car.
OK. What shall I take first?
Well, I can carry the red cool box, but could you take the cans of drink? Oh, no, wait. Take the tent before anything else. It's heavier. And then my camp bed, too.
Make your mind up, Mum.
I have. Just do as I say. And, Manu, thanks. Manu, help me load up the car, please. I've got the camping stuff together here in the hallway, but I need someone strong to carry it to the car.
OK. What shall I take first?
Well, I can carry the red cool box, but could you take the cans of drink? Oh, no, wait. Take the tent before anything else. It's heavier. And then my camp bed, too.
Make your mind up, Mum.
I have. Just do as I say. And, Manu, thanks.
Question 6. What 2 football skills can Kevin do well, which could help his team win the match?
Right then. Let's plan what we are going to do in the second half of the game. We're losing 2-0 at the moment, and we've got to win this match if we're going to get into the finals. Kevin, are you listening?
It's useless. We've lost our best player.
No more negative talk, Kevin. We know they're skillful at keeping the ball, but you can easily get the ball from their players. They have a weak defence, and we don't know how good their goalkeeper is. You can kick the ball really hard. And there's no reason why we can't score 3 goals and win. Now come on, everyone. Let's go for it. Right then. Let's plan what we are going to do in the second half of the game. We're losing 2-0 at the moment, and we've got to win this match if we're going to get into the finals. Kevin, are you listening?
It's useless. We've lost our best player.
No more negative talk, Kevin. We know they're skillful at keeping the ball, but you can easily get the ball from their players. They have a weak defence, and we don't know how good their goalkeeper is. You can kick the ball really hard, and there's no reason why we can't score 3 goals and win. Now come on, everyone. Let's go for it.
That is the last of questions 1 to 6. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. Listen to the following interview with Deepa Raj, who works in the Mumbai film industry as a Foley artist, and then complete the notes below. You will hear the interview twice.
Welcome to Watch Out, our weekly radio programme about films and filmmaking. Today, I am joined by Deepa Raj, who is a Foley artist in one of the largest Mumbai film studios. Tell me, Deepa, what exactly is a Foley artist?
Well, a Foley artist is a kind of sound engineer. You may not realise it, but nearly all the films made in Bollywood in India are made with little sound recording on location. This is the same as in other countries around the world.
Don't they record any sound when they film the scenes with the actors?
Oh, yes, they try to capture the sounds of the actors speaking the dialogue, but there are many reasons why they want to add to the soundtrack afterwards in the studios. There may be a lot of background noise, for instance, traffic, trains, or aircraft noise. The noises on location often spoil the dialogue. So the actors might have to speak in the studio and replace a whole scene or just a few words.
So your job is to record the voices of the actors in the studio?
That is just a small part of it. We have to add to the soundtrack to make it sound more realistic. On a film set, nothing is real. In a sword fight, for example, the swords are often made of plastic. The floor is usually made of wood painted to look like polished stone. The sounds are not convincing, and the Foley artist's job is to replace them with realistic sounds.
So, how do you manage to create the proper sounds?
Well, the swords have to sound like metal clashing, so we use metal sticks and bang them together. At the same time, the floors have to echo like hard surfaces, so we drop steel pots onto stone to make loud clattering sounds. We record these sounds and then add them to the soundtrack.
It's like building up a painting, layer upon layer of paint.
Exactly so. We are artists in our own right. Even smaller sounds are added, like clothes flapping in the wind or a fire crackling. We crumple up plastic for that effect. They are what makes the film sound real. If you can tell that the sound is done by a Foley artist, then it isn't very good. It has to sound absolutely natural.
What is the most difficult part of the job?
Perhaps it's making the different sounds of feet. A Foley artist is sometimes known as a walker or stepper, because we provide the sound of all the footsteps in the film. Every footstep for every character. We have to match the steps with the surface. Is it sand? Or snow? Or leaves? We must remember the mood of the character. Is he angry? Happy? In a panic?
That must be really hard. Tell me,
Is it true that you still use coconut shells to make the sound of a horse's hooves?
Yes. Believe it or not, that is still the best way to make the sound of a galloping horse. Two coconut shells, one against the other, one of the cheapest tools in our studio.
Thank you, Deepa. Some interesting facts there for our listeners.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Welcome to Watch Out, our weekly radio programme about films and filmmaking. Today, I am joined by Deepa Raj, who is a Foley artist in one of the largest Mumbai film studios. Tell me, Deepa, what exactly is a Foley artist?
Well, a Foley artist is a kind of sound engineer. You may not realise it, but nearly all the films made in Bollywood in India are made with little sound recording on location. This is the same as in other countries around the world.
Don't they record any sound when they film the scenes with the actors?
Oh yes, they try to capture the sounds of the actors speaking the dialogue, but there are many reasons why they want to add to the soundtrack afterwards in the studios. There may be a lot of background noise, for instance, traffic, trains, or aircraft noise. The noises on location often spoil the dialogue, so the actors might have to speak in the studio and replace a whole scene or just a few words.
So your job is to record the voices of the actors in the studio?
That is just a small part of it. We have to add to the soundtrack to make it sound more realistic. On a film set, nothing is real. In a sword fight, for example, the swords are often made of plastic. The floor is usually made of wood painted to look like polished stone. The sounds are not convincing, and the Foley artist's job is to replace them with realistic sounds.
So, how do you manage to create the proper sounds?
Well, the swords have to sound like metal clashing. So we use metal sticks and bang them together. At the same time, the floors have to echo like hard surfaces, so we drop steel pots onto stone to make loud clattering sounds. We record these sounds and then add them to the soundtrack.
It's like building up a painting, layer upon layer of paint.
Exactly so. We are artists in our own right. Even smaller sounds are added, like clothes flapping in the wind or a fire crackling. We crumple up plastic for that effect. They are what makes the film sound real. If you can tell that the sound is done by a Foley artist, then it isn't very good. It has to sound absolutely natural.
What is the most difficult part of the job?
Perhaps it's making the different sounds of feet. A Foley artist is sometimes known as a walker or stepper because we provide the sound of all the footsteps in the film. Every footstep for every character. We have to match the steps with the surface. Is it sand or snow or leaves? We must remember the mood of the character. Is he angry, happy, in a panic?
That must be really hard. Tell me, is it true that you still use coconut shells to make the sound of a horse's hooves?
Yes. Believe it or not, that is still the best way to make the sound of a galloping horse. Two coconut shells, one against the other, one of the cheapest tools in our studio.
Thank you, Deepa. Some interesting facts there for our listeners.
That is the end of question 7. In a moment, you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8. Listen to the following interview with a man who organises an unusual music festival known as the Freeze Festival, and then complete the notes below. You will hear the interview twice.
Music festivals are very popular events in many countries now. They're big summer attractions. But perhaps one of the more unusual ones takes place in London, in the UK, in the winter. And I have here one of the organisers to tell us more about it. Martin Vincent, welcome to our Music News Show.
Hi, thanks for inviting me onto your show.
Martin, for those of us who are not familiar with the Freeze Festival, perhaps you would give us a rough idea of what it's all about.
Right. Well, it's a music festival with a difference. Not only can you go along and hear bands and all kinds of great music, but you can go along and watch skiing and snowboarding competitions, and all in the City of London. The first Freeze Festival was held in the winter of 2008, and now it looks as if it will be a regular annual event. At first it was 3 days long, but it's shorter now, all fitting into a 2-day weekend, packed with activities and fun for all ages.
This is in the City of London, right?
That's right. It's held on a large site on the south bank of the River Thames, a former coal-fired power station where they made electricity, but which is no longer in use. So there's plenty of space. And we need it for the skiing and snowboarding.
Surely you can't depend on London getting large quantities of snow. It may be cold, but not that cold. There is hardly ever any ice, let alone snow. England must have one of the lowest snowfall rates in Europe.
You're right. All the snow has to be man-made.
That must be a lot of snow to make.
You're right again. The area around the power station has to be turned into a skier's paradise, with 360 tons of snow. The main feature of the festival is a huge ramp for the skiers and snowboarders to jump from.
Yes, I've seen videos of that on the internet. It looks huge. How big is the ramp exactly?
The slope is 100 metres long. The skiers and the snowboarders have to travel as fast as they can down the slope at a terrifying 40-degree angle, and then go up the 32-metre-high ramp at great speed, up to 60 kilometres per hour, so they can leap off the top into the air. It takes a lot of courage to make those jumps, and it's fantastic to watch.
I suppose the music must be another major attraction.
Yes, it attracts artists from all over the world, and thousands of people crowd into the enormous tents to listen.
So it's really a festival for music lovers and snow sports enthusiasts.
Well, yes, but there's more to it than that. We have art exhibitions, and there's a great range of shops. Skiing has a wide range of fashionable clothing associated with it, and all the major sports dealers will be there to show off their latest ranges of clothing. So, if you need a woolly hat or some waterproof gloves or some stylish sunglasses, this is a great place to come and find them.
It all sounds like a great day out.
There are a few tickets left for this year's festival. Just go online and check out the website, www.freezefestival.com.
Well, Martin, we've run out of time, I'm afraid, but thanks for coming in today.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Music festivals are very popular events in many countries now. They're big summer attractions. But perhaps one of the more unusual ones takes place in London, in the UK, in the winter. And I have here one of the organisers to tell us more about it. Martin Vincent, welcome to our Music News Show.
Hi, thanks for inviting me onto your show.
Martin, for those of us who are not familiar with the Frieze Festival, perhaps you would give us a rough idea of what it's all about.
Right. Well, it's a music festival with a difference. Not only can you go along and hear bands and all kinds of great music, but you can go along and watch skiing and snowboarding competitions, and all in the City of London. The first Frieze Festival was held in the winter of 2008, and now it looks as if it will be a regular annual event. At first it was 3 days long, but it's shorter now, all fitting into a 2-day weekend, packed with activities and fun for all ages.
This is in the City of London, right?
That's right. It's held on a large site on the south bank of the River Thames, a former coal-fired power station where they made electricity, but which is no longer in use. So there's plenty of space. And we need it for the skiing and snowboarding.
Surely you can't depend on London getting large quantities of snow. It may be cold, but not that cold. There is hardly ever any ice, let alone snow. England must have one of the lowest snowfall rates in Europe.
You're right. All the snow has to be man-made.
That must be a lot of snow to make.
You're right again. The area around the power station has to be turned into a skier's paradise, with 360 tons of snow. The main feature of the festival is a huge ramp for the skiers and snowboarders to jump from.
Yes, I've seen videos of that on the internet. It looks huge. How big is the ramp exactly?
The slope is 100 metres long. The skiers and the snowboarders have to travel as fast as they can down the slope at a terrifying 40-degree angle, and then go up the 32-metre-high ramp at great speed, up to 60 kilometres per hour, so they can leap off the top into the air. It takes a lot of courage to make those jumps, and it's fantastic to watch.
I suppose the music must be another major attraction.
Yes, it attracts artists from all over the world, and thousands of people crowd into the enormous tents to listen.
So it's really a festival for music lovers and snow sports enthusiasts.
Well, yes, but there's more to it than that. We have art exhibitions, and there's a great range of shops. Skiing has a wide range of fashionable clothing associated with it, and all the major sports dealers will be there to show off their latest ranges of clothing. So, if you need a woolly hat, or some waterproof gloves, or some stylish sunglasses, this is a great place to come and find them.
It all sounds like a great day out.
There are a few tickets left for this year's festival. Just go online and check out the website, www.friezefestival.com.
Well, Martin, we've run out of time, I'm afraid, but thanks for coming in today.
That is the end of question 8. In a moment, you will hear question 9. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 9. Listen to the following chat show conversation about a robot called Flexi, and then answer the questions below. You will hear the conversation twice.
Tonight on our chat show, for a change, we have not one guest, but two. Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to introduce you to Dr. Philip Jacob, who has flown from Japan to be with us tonight. And with him, someone those of you here in the studio may recognise. But let's ask Philip to introduce him to us. Good evening, Philip.
Good evening. I'm very pleased to be able to introduce my friend Flexi to you this evening. Unfortunately, he's not able to speak to you himself, but he can shake your hand. You see, Flexi is the world's most advanced robot. He looks like a human and he can do many things like a human, but I can assure you he is definitely only a machine.
Good evening, Flexi. And let me tell all of you at home that this is definitely the first time I have ever shaken hands with a real, live robot. That handshake was rather scary. He was able to move his hand exactly at the right times and at the same speed as I moved my hand. However does he do it?
He has two visual sensors in his head. You could call them his eyes, I suppose. And he can also sense movement and pressure in his wrists. He is able to recognise your hand movements as a wish to shake hands.
Amazing. Tell us a little about how Flexi came into being.
Well, this Flexi is the latest of 12 versions of the robot since we started developing it in around 1984. The aim is to produce a robot which can help people in their everyday tasks, especially people who have difficulty in doing things by themselves. We are well on the way to achieving our aim.
Does Flexi have someone controlling him off stage?
No. In the past, he needed a controller, but now he's able to get things done by himself. This is thanks to a high-tech computer system which he carries around with him.
Well, I can't see anything. Where is it then?
It's actually located inside his chest area.
Oh, really? It's well hidden. So, what kind of things can he do on his own?
Well, he is now able to tell if his battery is running low. It only lasts for about an hour, and he will make his own way to the battery charger.
I saw him walk into the studio just now. He looks a bit like a small astronaut, but he can walk quite smoothly.
Yes, he's become more flexible over the years, so that now he can walk at 2.7 kilometres per hour and run at 6 kilometres per hour. Not only that, he can walk up a slope and climb stairs. He can even kick a football back to you.
That is hard to believe.
If you look at his website on the internet, you can see a video of him doing just that. Another ability of his that you can see in the video is twisting open a bottle of water and pouring the water into a cup.
However can he manage that without fingers?
He doesn't need them. Our scientists have managed to create what they call 34 degrees of freedom. No other robot can do what he can do. Flexi is able to move his wrists and his arms in 34 different ways.
That's great.
Yes, and as a result, he can perform quite delicate movements, such as pushing a shopping trolley or turning on a light switch.
Tell me, does Flexi make many public appearances?
Quite a few, and all around the world. Believe it or not, he conducted a symphony orchestra in the USA in 2008. And imagine, last December, he appeared in a popular TV quiz show in Britain and actually managed to win.
Thank you, Dr. Jacob, and thank you, Flexi. I wonder what he'll be doing next time he visits us.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
tonight on our chat show. For a change, we have not one guest, but two. Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to introduce you to Dr. Philip Jacob, who has flown from Japan to be with us tonight. And with him, someone those of you here in the studio may recognise. But let's ask Philip to introduce him to us. Good evening, Philip.
Good evening. I'm very pleased to be able to introduce my friend Flexi to you this evening. Unfortunately, he's not able to speak to you himself, but he can shake your hand. You see, Flexi is the world's most advanced robot. He looks like a human and he can do many things like a human, but I can assure you he is definitely only a machine.
Good evening, Flexi. And let me tell all of you at home that this is definitely the first time I have ever shaken hands with a real, live robot. That handshake was rather scary. He was able to move his hand exactly at the right times and at the same speed as I moved my hand. However does he do it?
He has two visual sensors in his head. You could call them his eyes, I suppose. And he can also sense movement and pressure in his wrists. He is able to recognise your hand movements as a wish to shake hands.
Amazing. Tell us a little about how Flexi came into being.
Well, this Flexi is the latest of 12 versions of the robot since we started developing it in around 1984. The aim is to produce a robot which can help people in their everyday tasks, especially people who have difficulty in doing things by themselves. We are well on the way to achieving our aim.
Does Flexi have someone controlling him off stage?
No. In the past, he needed a controller, but now he's able to get things done by himself. This is thanks to a high-tech computer system which he carries around with him.
Well, I can't see anything. Where is it then?
It's actually located inside his chest area.
Oh, really? It's well hidden. So, what kind of things can he do on his own?
Well, he is now able to tell if his battery is running low. It only lasts for about an hour, and he will make his own way to the battery charger.
I saw him walk into the studio just now. He looks a bit like a small astronaut, but he can walk quite smoothly.
Yes, he's become more flexible over the years, so that now he can walk at 2.7 kilometres per hour and run at 6 kilometres per hour. Not only that, he can walk up a slope and climb stairs. He can even kick a football back to you.
That is hard to believe.
If you look at his website on the internet, you can see a video of him doing just that. Another ability of his that you can see in the video is twisting open a bottle of water and pouring the water into a cup.
However can he manage that without fingers?
He doesn't need them. Our scientists have managed to create what they call 34 degrees of freedom. No other robot can do what he can do. Flexi is able to move his wrists and his arms in 34 different ways.
That's great.
Yes, and as a result, he can perform quite delicate movements, such as pushing a shopping trolley or turning on a light switch.
Tell me, does Flexi make many public appearances?
Quite a few, and all around the world. Believe it or not, he conducted a symphony orchestra in the USA in 2008. And imagine, last December, he appeared in a popular TV quiz show in Britain and actually managed to win.
Thank you, Dr. Jacob, and thank you, Flexi. I wonder what he'll be doing next time he visits us.
That is the end of question 9. In a moment you will hear question 10. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 10. Listen to the following talk about a building in Indonesia, one of the World Heritage Sites, and then answer the questions below. You will hear the talk twice.
Good evening, and welcome to the first in our series about World Heritage Sites. Our guest today is Dr. Sutupo, who is going to tell us about an amazing building in Indonesia, the magnificent Borobudur Temple. Good evening, Dr. Sutupo.
Good evening, and thank you for inviting me onto your programme. I'll start by explaining exactly what it means when a place is described as a World Heritage Site. It's not just buildings which can be given this title. It could be a forest, a mountain, a desert, or even a complete city. In fact, it could be any place which is considered of outstanding cultural or natural importance. The World Heritage Committee has members from all over the world. Once a year, they meet to decide which places should be given the title of World Heritage Site. And then they decide how much money should be given to each. There are nearly 1,000 sites listed from around the world. Nearly every country has at least one. In my country, the Borobudur Temple has been given World Heritage status. It dates back to about 800 AD and was built as a temple to Buddha. It is built high in the mountains, and from the very top, there are beautiful views across the green plain towards the distant volcanoes. In fact, the building and its grounds represent a Buddhist view of the universe. They are built as a series of square and circular terraces, which allow visitors to climb upwards from the low areas representing the everyday world to the highest levels representing the highest possible spiritual state. There are hundreds of stone carvings showing stories about the life of Buddha, and all over 1,200 years old. You can understand why it was given World Heritage status. For reasons we don't know, the temple was forgotten for nearly 1,000 years. In the 1800s, a team of explorers investigated rumours of a great ruin in central Java. After a long search, they discovered the temple, hidden underneath volcanic ash and jungle vegetation. During the 1970s and 1980s, the government undertook extensive restoration work. All the individual stones in the carvings were removed, cleaned, and put back in exactly the same place. In 2011, the buildings were under threat after a volcano erupted and covered the area with ash. We organised a tree planting event to try to improve the soil quality and to decrease carbon dioxide emissions from the ash. We had many young volunteers come to help. It's not just volcanoes which pose a threat. Earthquakes are becoming more frequent in the region, and now global warming is an issue. We are racing against time. Warmer weather could cause cracks in the carvings. Not only this, but the changing climate is thought to be responsible for acid rain, which has already damaged some of the statues. Thank you for listening so patiently to me. Now, if these things interest you, you can go online to see how you can volunteer to help World Heritage Sites in your region of the world.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Good evening, and welcome to the first in our series about World Heritage Sites. Our guest today is Dr. Sutupo, who is going to tell us about an amazing building in Indonesia, the magnificent Borobudur Temple. Good evening, Dr. Sutupo.
Good evening, and thank you for inviting me onto your programme. I'll start by explaining exactly what it means when a place is described as a World Heritage Site. It's not just buildings which can be given this title. It could be a forest, a mountain, a desert, or even a complete city. In fact, it could be any place which is considered of outstanding cultural or natural importance. The World Heritage Committee has members from all over the world. Once a year, they meet to decide which places should be given the title of World Heritage Site. And then they decide how much money should be given to each. There are nearly 1,000 sites listed from around the world. Nearly every country has at least one. In my country, the Borobudur Temple has been given World Heritage status. It dates back to about 800 AD and was built as a temple to Buddha. It is built high in the mountains, and from the very top, there are beautiful views across the green plain towards the distant volcanoes. In fact, the building and its grounds represent a Buddhist view of the universe. They are built as a series of square and circular terraces, which allow visitors to climb upwards from the low areas representing the everyday world to the highest levels representing the highest possible spiritual state. There are hundreds of stone carvings showing stories about the life of Buddha, and all over 1,200 years old. You can understand why it was given World Heritage status. For reasons we don't know, the temple was forgotten for nearly 1,000 years. In the 1800s, a team of explorers investigated rumours of a great ruin in central Java. After a long search, they discovered the temple, hidden underneath volcanic ash and jungle vegetation. During the 1970s and 1980s, the government undertook extensive restoration work. All the individual stones in the carvings were removed, cleaned, and put back in exactly the same place. In 2011, the buildings were under threat after a volcano erupted and covered the area with ash. We organised a tree planting event to try to improve the soil quality and to decrease carbon dioxide emissions from the ash. We had many young volunteers come to help. It's not just volcanoes which pose a threat. Earthquakes are becoming more frequent in the region, and now global warming is an issue. We are racing against time. Warmer weather could cause cracks in the carvings. Not only this, but the changing climate is thought to be responsible for acid rain, which has already damaged some of the statues. Thank you for listening so patiently to me. Now, if these things interest you, you can go online to see how you can volunteer to help World Heritage Sites in your region of the world.
That is the end of question 10 and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers. Thank you, everyone.